From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of April, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. A bit later in the program, TGM's Matt Bennett from Windsor will be along to look at the cash grain market, and we'll close out the day together by having a discussion, as we always do, about the agricultural weather forecast. T-Storm's Mike Tenora will be here. He's based in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way today, we'll take a look at a brand new play that will premiere this weekend, Friday and Saturday evening, at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church. It's about passing down the farm and sponsored by the Land Connection. Tara Brockman will join us to discuss it, and it all happens right here during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures finished like this. The nearbys in the soft red winter wheat down 4 cents at $6.92.5. That's a close and not a settlement price. The harvest month, July, at $6.96.75, 4.5 cents lower. From Kansas City, the hard red finished at $7.42.5, up 18 and a quarter, and that one is the settlement price back in Chicago. The corn pit now, nearby contract, May futures down 12 and a quarter at $6.29.25, July at $6.17.5, 12 and three quarters lower, and September corn, $5.53.25, down 5 3/4. December futures, a penny and a quarter lower at $5.38.25, the March contract at $5.49.5. down a penny for the day. Maybean futures, $13.72. These are settlement prices, down 8 1/4. July at $13.51 3/4, settled 6 lower. August soybeans, $13.22, down 4 3/4 on the afternoon. September, $12.68, a settlement price, down 3 1/4. November beans again today, up a half cent at $12.33. And next year's January at $12.38 3/4, up a half as well. Bean meal futures at $3.97.20, down 80, and the bean oil at $48.48, down 67. Live cattle futures from the Mercantile Exchange, April contract on the afternoon at $127.25, down 72.5 cents. June, 85 lower at $122.35, and April feeders $143.90 per 100 pounds, down 65 cents for the day. May futures at $145.95, down 62.5, and lean hogs settled the April contract at $81.42.5, a dime higher. The May futures were down a buck at $89.15. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, nearby May contract, $93.22. That's down $1.23 a barrel. The RBOB price of gasoline, that's wholesale price, at $2.89.07, a penny and 6 cents lower. Ethanol trading at $2.42. 8 tenths higher, and the spread, or the difference between the two, 47 7/10 of a cent. That's 2 4/10 of a cent narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.94 4/10, up 4 4/10. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.96 6/10, 3.5 cents lower. Gold futures on the day down $1.10 at $1,552 even, and the U.S. dollar at 82.68. That's down 0.03. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Should see mostly sunny skies, a high of 57 degrees, west wind at 3 to 5 miles an hour, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 35 degrees. Light west winds at the north, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Those will be before midnight. Sunny tomorrow, a high of 57 on a northeast wind at 5 to 10. And then tomorrow evening, partly cloudy, the low of 41. Saturday, sunny skies and 67. It'll be breezy. Saturday evening, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy and 50 degrees. Sunday, that 30% chance of showers continues, some thunderstorms as well in the area. Then it'll turn partly sunny, a high of 64 on Sunday. Sunday night, showers and thunderstorms likely, cloudy, and a low of 49 degrees. On Monday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, cloudy and 64. That will continue through Monday night with a low of 48. More showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday and 64. Tuesday night, showers and thunderstorms, cloudy, 46. And Wednesday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and 54. We're on the agricultural weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the closing market report. It is the 4th day of April, a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, has been waiting patiently on the phone line this afternoon. Hi, Dan. How are you today?
Doing fine, Todd.
Well, thanks for being with us. First, let's go through those numbers that USDA threw at us last week. The grain stocks report was a pretty big surprise to much of the industry, although you've been talking about a whole bunch of bushels, maybe not quite as many as the USDA threw back in, I think around 375 million, that is, coming back into the marketplace, and they all came in at once.
Yeah, well, we were going to have to do something if the December number was correct. And, of course, we found out last week that the December number was not correct, and we're not feeding as many bushels as what the trade was anticipating based upon the data that we saw there on the January crop report, and that was the December 1st stocks number. So now there's nothing to say that the number that we got last week is on the money either. I mean, that could be, a couple hundred million bushels too high, and we're going to have to live with this number now until we get to the end of June, and then by then we'll be into the growing season, and maybe old crop supplies won't mean much at that time. But that 400 million bushels, or I average it at 400 million, that really did a fundamental shift in the corn market, if it's correct. And that's why you're seeing such great weakness in the old crop months. Even today, we're still unwinding, your long old crop, short new crop spreads. A lot of traders were long the old crop, short the new, betting that, we were going to have to do some more work on the rationing side to find those 500 million bushels to get carry out. Or 400 million bushels to get carry out up close to a billion bushels. Well, since USDA found those bushels, my guess here in the new supply demand table that carry out will probably, they'll probably put 300 million of that probably into carry out and take carry out from 632 up to 932. And I don't know what they do with the other 50. Or 100, they may scatter it around, maybe put some more in ethanol, who knows. But we're gonna see a billion bushel carry out on the balance sheet here next week when USDA releases those numbers.
Well, as you take a look at that and you think about new crop, which is what, just only about 30 cents lower than it was on Thursday before the report last week, how much downside potential is there in that marketplace?
Well, the thing I want to point out is both corn and soybeans, new crop months, are following a counter-seasonal decline, very similar to what happened in 2010 and actually what happened last year. And, of course, in both those instances, the weather turned adverse in July and August, and then we had the rallies, into the summer and fall months. Now, whether or not we do that the third time, I don't know. at least at the moment, there's little reason to think that there's much upside potential in new crop months other than if we get ourselves into a weather planning issue. But most, as a rule, planting issues don't really take hold until mid-May, because that's when acreages begin to get shifted. That's when maybe acres don't get planted because they're too wet or too dry or whatever. But it does look like, the weather forecast could keep things a little bit cool, a little bit on the wet side, and maybe this planting pace may not develop as quickly as everybody would like to see it, and then we could maybe get a little rally. Actually, a counter-seasonal move for the month of April would be an up market for December corn, because as a rule, December corn declines during April because that's when the corn planters start going, and that is hard to get a market to hold together when the corn planters are moving. But maybe the corn planters don't move much here in April, and then therefore maybe the Dease corn maybe gets a little pop out of it. But both markets are counter-seasonal. Your long-term charts, when you look at the weekly chart in soybeans, you got a head and shoulders top formation. That's probably bearish enough to talk about something down below $10 on soybeans. I think on new crop corn, I think something down below $5 is clearly in the cards. You really don't find trend line support, I don't think, until you get down to 4.25, 4.5. So even at today's prices, you know, I think there could be upwards of 80 cents or so downside risk in the long run. But, you know, we haven't got the crop planted yet, let alone harvested. So, we got along. But the trend, that market, that fundamental shift of finding more bushels really pulled the plug out of any kind of bullish argument, at least in the near term.
Yeah, for the old crop in particular. Did it spur any export business for corn or soybeans?
No, it did spur a lot of end-user pricing, but it was end-user pricing more from the livestock sectors and the ethanol people, because corn's falling quicker than ethanol, so the margins were improving. So we did see some pretty good end-user pricing, but not necessarily in the export market. South America still is pretty well a dominant export force. We kind of thought probably by now that they'd be out of it, but they're still exporting a little corn. There should be a window here over the next 60 days or 90 days that maybe our corn exports could pick up a little bit, but we really haven't seen anything spectacular, just like today, again, just 15 million bushels.
All right. We'll talk to you again next week.
Very well.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He is in Mandeville, Louisiana. In fact, we'll talk to him sooner than next week. He'll be one of our panelists on Commodity Week, and one of our guests will be Joe Persaki of USDA NASS. We'll record that at about 4:30 tomorrow afternoon.
Learned Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learned Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Now here's Dave Dickey with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, the Agriculture Department will cut the direct payments for all crop farmers by 8.5% this year. FSA will reduce direct payments in order to avoid requiring about 350,000 producers to refund a portion of the payments they have already received through other programs. All FSA payment programs are subject to a 5.1% sequester cut. In addition to that cut, FSA will also cut the direct payments by 3.4% in order to avoid asking producers who have already received the MILC, SURE, and NAP payments to repay them. While cutting the direct payments of producers who did not get the MILC, SURE, or NAP payments may seem unfair, FSA is using the limited flexibility it is given under the Farm Bill to proceed in this fashion, because sending bills to each of the farmers who owes a small amount of money and asking them to pay it back would be more expensive. The Wall Street Journal today says that a new report from the trustee of MF Global Holdings concludes that a risky business strategy, failure to improve inadequate systems, as well as negligent conduct by former Chief Executive Officer John Corzine and others, contributed to the unraveling of MF Global. The report laid much of the blame at Corzine's feet, accusing him of implementing trading strategies with minimal oversight and exceeding broad approved limits for some European trades. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Tara Brockman, the Executive Director of the Land Connection in Bloomington, Illinois, is on the phone line with us. The Land Connection is a nonprofit organization, if you don't know. It's dedicated to protecting farmland, training sustainable and organic farmers, and promoting a vibrant local food system. From time to time, I have worked with Tara and the Land Connection over the past couple of decades. Tara, it's been far too long since we visited. Thanks so much for taking the time with us. We had a press release from you this week on a brand new, this is kind of out of the ordinary, play that the Land Connection is sponsoring in a few places around the state. In Peoria, that one's happened. Here this weekend at St. Matthew's, right? I think that's correct.
St. Matthew's Lutheran Church.
And then at the U of I Extension Building in Springfield later in the month. These all start at 6:30 in the evening. You can find out more about the timings and the places online at thelandconnection.org. Tell me about the play and why the Land Connection is involved, Tara.
Yeah, it is an interesting and somewhat unusual thing, but we're finding that it's actually really working well for us. So the play is called What's Your Legacy? And it is about an urgent issue. As we all know, there's about, I think, one farmer under 30 for every six farmers over 60. So we kind of see where that demographic is going, and we know a lot of the last generation of a multi-generation family farm, often the last generation is farming right now, often they're quite elderly, and often people aren't quite sure, they don't think they have that many options except possibly to sell the farm and, you know, divide the money up amongst the family, and that's not a bad option in some circumstances, but there's often a lot of emotions and connection to the land. And so this play actually had been heavily researched by an organization in Minnesota and developed by Doug Nopar at the Land Stewardship Project. And they interviewed a lot of elderly couples and a lot of young people wanting to farm, and they created this play. And it just presents a family in a situation that many families find themselves in of perhaps aging, perhaps not in the best of health, and perhaps not even wanting to talk about it because it's hard to talk about. But you can watch this play and you can engage with the characters and you can talk about them, which is easier to talk about than maybe your own family. So that's what we've been able to do, is present a scenario. There's no real ending to this play, but when it does end, we invite the audience to participate in the discussion. And we've had a wonderful run so far, two performances in Bloomington and two in Peoria, and looking forward to the ones coming up in Urbana.
Yeah, on Friday and Saturday night, again, they're at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church, that's in Urbana, on Philo Road. The play starts at 6:30, and you'd like people to pre-register because it doesn't cost anything, but there is some food involved, and I suppose you'd kind of like to know how many people are coming. They can do that at thelandconnection.org. Tell me more about Gerald and Nettie. This is the couple, and the play is just 25 minutes long, but this is the couple that's having the discussion on the stage about the farm. It's been in Nettie's family for five generations, and they're trying to figure out just exactly where to go and what to do with their farms and how to pass it along, and I suppose how to keep conservation active on it as well.
Yes, and Nettie, when she remembers back to her childhood and remembers that her parents and grandparents were really one of the first people who tried to implement conservation measures and grass waterways and whatnot on their farm, and had a very diverse farm with livestock and pastures and grain and, you know, typical farm of previous generations. So she has these memories, and she also feels pretty strongly that she wants all of her and her husband's work to continue. You know, they've taken care of this land and hope that someone will take care of the land after them, even though their three children have gone on and made lives of their own that don't involve farming. And so there is this dilemma, and her husband is rather risk averse, and Gerald is wants to take care of Nettie financially and thinks that, you know, he doesn't want to take any risks at all. He doesn't want to try anything new, but he's also having his own dilemmas. And so they're hashing out what should they do. You know, should they involve the kids in the decision, and should they, you know, who should they talk to? And Nettie had just heard the preacher talking about what will be your legacy, and she's really been thinking about this. And they talk about renting, and they talk about a new young couple who actually just dropped by, and they say, should we let these young folks, but how can anybody start farming these days? And they go back and forth, and again, there's no resolution, but there's a lot of options that come up during the course of the play that then we are able to discuss with the audience after the play.
Absolutely, and the audience can come tomorrow evening, Friday evening, or Saturday evening at 6:30 to St. Matthew's Lutheran Church. That's there on Philo Road in Urbana. Please do register online. The address, again, for the Land Connection is what, Tara?
www.thelandconnection.org/play.
All right. Thank you so much, Tara. And hope it's not so long between our conversations this next time around.
Yeah, me too. So thanks a lot, Todd.
All right, thank you. Tara Brockman is the executive director of the Land Connection based in Bloomington, Illinois. If you'd like to see the play, and the name of the play, again, is What Will Be Your Legacy? You can do that right here in Champaign, Urbana, actually Urbana on Philo Road, Friday and Saturday evening of this week. Register online at thelandconnection.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Let's take a look at the cash grain market on the phone line with us for a Thursday afternoon at this time is Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Matt, tell me about basis levels since the reports last week. How's the reaction been?
Well, you know, generally, whenever you are in a tight situation and you see just a complete collapse in the futures market and on the board, you would see a pretty good basis appreciation. And we've seen some firming, but nothing like maybe I would expect to, given everything else that we know about last year's crop.
Does that tell you that maybe what you thought you knew about last year's crop isn't quite true and USDA is closer than many think?
Well, good question on that, Todd. I mean, I guess I have been proven to be wrong several times before. I do feel, you know, pretty strong that there's not as much corn out there as what people think. But then on the same token, you know, there is people that are bringing corn in from South America. They're on the southeast part of the U.S. that are saying that they can do it much cheaper. You know, now after this report, obviously there's been a little bit of a change in dynamics, so it'll be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, but next week we get the WASDE numbers, and we'll see more about how it shakes out pretty quickly, I guess.
Yeah, no question about it.
Okay, and then on the bean basis, what do you see?
On bean basis, we really haven't seen a lot of change. I mean, it's firmed up a little bit as well, but again, you know, we probably haven't dropped near as much, especially relatively speaking. So it's a little bit different ballgame than what the corn is, but, you know, both on corn and beans, these guys are still getting in times where they're really kind of looking for bushels, and I kind of wonder when they're going to have to pay the piper. And after the report last week, you know, on beans, I think it's probably a little more likely that the basis could get really hot than maybe on corn.
And very quickly, your bids for the day:
6:44 on cash, 5:20 for fall corn, 13.92 and 12.07 on beans.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the closing market report on this Thursday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes with today's ag weather.
It's National Cordon Bleu Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1828, Gasparis van Woden of Amsterdam patented chocolate milk powder. In 1871, Mary Florence Potts of Ottumwa, Iowa, patented the Mrs. Potts sad iron. It featured a detachable handle so several iron bodies could be heated and used in turn as one cooled down. Three irons, one handle, and one stand were sold as a set. In 1883, Peter Cooper died. Cooper obtained the first American patent for the manufacture of gelatin. In 1895, a cough syrup manufacturer, Pearlby Waite, purchased the patent and developed a packaged gelatin dessert. Waite's wife May named it Jell-O. In 1887, William Cumming Rose was born. An American biochemist, he spent a decade researching human diet. His research established the importance of 8 essential amino acids in human nutrition. And in 1932, vitamin C was isolated by C.G. King at the University of Pittsburgh. After 5 years of work on untold thousands of lemons, King and his colleagues isolated a crystalline substance identified as vitamin C. King was given a patent for his isolation process, but he was denied a patent for the vitamin itself since it was a known substance that had been isolated by a different method 3 years earlier. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Pete Leavitt is away today. Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago is with us. Mike, thanks so much for filling in. Tell me about the weather forecast for the next week or so. Farmers will want to get into the field, but they may be slowed down by a little rainfall.
Yes, well, we have kind of two different competing situations for planting across the Corn Belt and especially across Illinois. On the one hand, temperatures right now, at least topsoil temperatures, are too cold for widespread planting to begin. As of yesterday morning, most areas had topsoil temperatures hovering around 40 degrees or so, and we really need that number to be up into the 50s to have widespread corn planting begin. The good news is that as we move into the weekend, and especially early next week, we have a large system that develops across the Rockies and into the plains that will turn winds from the south across a large portion of the central U.S. And ultimately, what that means for Illinois and surrounding states is that temperatures will surge to above average levels for several days next week, especially Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, maybe even Wednesday if things work out. We could see widespread maximums into the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s, depending on exactly how everything works out. And that's especially good news for southern Illinois farmers, where typically planting would begin right about now, and we need that topsoil to warm. But the other side of the coin is that with all of that warmth comes a lot of humidity, and with that system also moving eastward at the same time, we set up a clash zone right across the central U.S., and we expect widespread rain and thunderstorms to eventually develop next week. We're looking for widespread 1 to 2 inch rains across most of the Corn Belt, possibly even higher than that across the Mississippi Delta and even stretching up into southern Illinois. The real question is, when will this rain begin? Right now, it looks like a majority of it will begin Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. So there might be a small window for planting to start next week, but it will quickly close by heavy rain, due to heavy rain at least, as next week progresses.
Is this the first in a series of storms that might come across the Midwest, or just an isolated rainstorm?
We think that it's the beginning of a stormy pattern, and the reason we say that is because we just had some big rains go through parts of the southern plains and into the Delta. We have two more systems moving across the northern plains and the northern Corn Belt this weekend. Then finally, that big system around midweek in the middle of the Corn Belt around Illinois. But it does look like another large warm-up will begin late next weekend or early the following week, so we're talking right around the middle of the month. More than likely, when you get a big warm-up this time of the year, rain accompanies it. So we're not believing that a large period of warm and dry weather is coming. We think more of a typical pattern of warm weather with rain and thunderstorms is happening this month.
Will those rains fall on the parts of the western Corn Belt, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, that have been so very dry even through the winter months?
Yes, we think that they will receive quite a bit of rain. Actually, they might be one of the bigger beneficiaries of rain, especially around Monday, Tuesday of next week. A half inch, 1.5 inches of rain, somewhere in that range, looks like a pretty decent possibility. And keep in mind that yields are really driven by what happens later in the year, June, July, and August, for corn and soybeans. So things could tend to improve with that rain coming up, despite the dryness in recent months.
Mike, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenoras with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.